This is the Leadership and Insurance Podcast, brought to you by FinPro Search Partners.
Insurance companies are businesses and they need to look for the long term and be sustainable.
We went from zero to one and now it's going from one to 100.
Insurance as a concept, as a kind of service, is brilliant. The execution is what we're looking at now.
I think the companies that are going to succeed are the ones that are going to understand and master the art of intent.
When we talk about innovation, we lean too heavily to think about technology and we don't think about creating a culture of innovation.
I think innovation is essentially continuous improvement of existing processes and platforms and product.
Right? It's got to be easy. It's got to be seamless.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Leadership and Insurance Emerging Tech Series podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Savage, and today I am very lucky to be joined by Thierry Bonfanti, who is the CPO of Uncork. Thierry, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Gavin. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. It's Friday here, of course, and Friday where you are. So it's been a good week. Looking forward to this one. Thierry, before we get into everything, low-code, AI, etc., InsurTech, I'd love it if you could kindly introduce yourself properly. You know, I'm always quite big on you've got a range of experience, 25 years of software experience, ranging from startups to large corporates. Would you mind talking us through your career way back from the beginning, how you got into tech and how you ended up in the world of InsurTech?
Sure. So, well, when I graduated out of the university, I was always interested in technology and the impact that it can have on society. So back then, the new computing era was just starting, which was all exciting. I got into that and then I fell very early on into AI. I actually was part of a very early program back in Europe with the team that had back then created a language called Prolog, which was very much Lisp and Prolog were the first two AI languages. So I fell into that promise of transformation that tech and AI could bring to the world very, very early on. And after that, I just basically over the years moved from one company to the next, trying to materialize that impact. So it has been a fun, and my first computer didn't even have a hard drive, just to give you a bit of a perspective. I had the two diskettes side by side on my, and I was already very lucky to have that computer. So it has evolved quite a bit, and it's exciting. And I think with Gen AI, which I know we're going to talk about, we're probably at that next acceleration phase, which is super exciting.
That's great, thank you. And Thierry, most will probably know who Uncork are, certainly on this podcast, given it's an insurance focused one. But just in case people don't, could you please introduce the Uncork business, the mission, the vision? That would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So Uncork really started with a vision that was meant to achieve two things. The first one, so if you look at the challenge that companies have had now for many years, they have a lot of things that have already been created, a lot of assets, a lot of applications, a lot of systems. And that legacy debt, in some cases, is pretty much transforming into an innovation paralysis. Like there's so much to do to keep the lights on that companies cannot innovate anymore. And so there is this friction between the business need to innovate and the challenges that IT is facing to basically just keep the lights on an ongoing basis. So what Uncork is trying to do is two things to disrupt that. The first one, which is what a lot of other people have already done, which is expand the number of developers from the classic core developers to more of the citizen developers. So looping in the business users, the non-core technical users, and making them part of the innovation process. That's a great starting point, and that's where a lot of systems stop. The second aspect of Uncork's vision, which is very unique, is once you've driven that innovation into Uncork, how do you abstract the maintenance of that innovation over time? So you can accelerate the innovation while at the same time making the maintenance of that innovation extremely efficient to avoid adding more to the paralysis that I was describing earlier. So those two things together, accelerate innovation, lower the TCO of the existing assets, is very much what Uncork is all about.
Awesome. Thank you. And yes, you mentioned that we're going to unpack Gen AI somewhat on this podcast. Before we do, I wanted to kind of jump into the concept low, no code, and the evolution of these platforms. You've been instrumental in developing low code platforms along with AI for many years. Like, when we talk about that specifically in insurance, you know, we've seen much higher adoption of late. Do you think, what's your kind of take on the concept of low code generally? How do you define it, first of all?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at it historically, the world has worked in a very strange model where there were a lot of people with ideas to innovate in a company, like a business expert, a subject matter expert, that were dependent on a very small number of people, the developers, the IT and developers, to transform that idea into an application. So you had this bottleneck of innovation where a lot of the ideas simply never materialized or didn't materialize the way the original inventor of the idea had in mind. So there was this kind of lost in translation and bottleneck syndrome going from a huge funnel of ideas into a constantly struggling and bottlenecked IT department. So that model is very much a legacy of the past because we had to invent complex languages to interact with computers. So the first thing that the low-code, no-code space did was, well, let's challenge that status quo. Let's create an experience that non-developers, people that have not gone through years of training as developers, can start to actually create simple and then over time more and more complex applications. So that's the whole citizen developer or business plus IT kind of development. And that really helped fostering a faster pace of innovation. Now, the problem in the B2B space, which is really what I spent my entire career with, is encouraging innovation is great, but there is always a moment where you have to go back to the IT specialization to put that in production. Like there is no way a bank or an insurance company or a major public sector agency is going to let someone with no technical understanding of security, compliance, regulation, performance, put something in production without having all that done. So the promise of low-code, no-code is exciting, but where it fell short is there is a time where you go back into that bottleneck. And so what you've just done is you've just moved where the bottleneck is in the process. You had no innovation. Now you have a lot of innovation, but still not going to production. So that has been, for me, that was the first, the excitement and a bit the disappointment about the low-code, no-code space, where if you look at what customers are doing today, although there is more and more consumption of low-code, no-code, there's also a lot of waste out of those efforts. A lot of those things never materialize in production applications. And when they do, they've just added more to the burden that the IT team has to deal with on a daily basis. So the next generation for us of that effort is what we call codeless as a service, where we do everything I just described, but we do store, think about it as a machine running in the cloud, like a layer in the cloud where we decouple the behavior of an application and the technology that is necessary to render that application. So the customers focus on the behavior and the uncorked layer in the cloud takes care of the abstraction of the technology. So in this case, not only you have unleashed more innovation by bringing more users into the mix, but you're doing that without adding unmanageable burden to the IT team that will be responsible to get that. So to me, that's the next frontier. If you only do the first half, you're solving the tip of the iceberg, but the bottom of the iceberg is getting bigger and bigger over time.
Excellent. And do you think from an insurance perspective, you know, would you think it in the past, it was maybe a combination of exactly that, you know, a lack of true execution, but also potentially a lack of educating, you know, non-technical members in the insurance world? Do you think there's a kind of combination of efforts there or problems whereby why the insurance industry has been slightly slow to adopt low-code technology?
Yeah, it's probably a mix of all that and other factors. I mean, clearly the applications and the systems run by an insurance are there's a lot of secret sauce involved in all those formulas, those systems, those calculations. So changing those things is a complex and potentially risky proposition. So you don't want to do that in an uncontrolled manner. I think there's different things at play here. When we talk to customers, when we talk to the business side of any customer in the banking industry, the insurance industry, public sector, they want to be part of the process, but until recently, they were locked out of that process. So there was this kind of chasm between the business community and the technical community inside a corporation. So the technology now can resolve that. Now you're getting past the technology change into more of the human change management, and making sure that this more fluid collaboration between business and technologists is seen as an opportunity and not as a burden or a risk by the two sides, quite frankly. So that's probably the next phase of transformation. And yes, education is key in this case.
Because I think the way you talk about it, codeless as a service is certainly better than low no code. I think the term low no code, you know, for non-technical business owners and business professionals in insurance, I think, you know, one of the terms I've heard lately from an insurtech, Loro insurtech, was it's called no build instead of low code or codeless. And sometimes I just think trying to put a dollar value on what this technology can do for an insurance business, sometimes the words of code and low, and it can just be maybe a bit daunting for non-technical users.
Yeah, and I think the way to look at that is, let's look at it from a business outcome. Let's look at it from a customer's benefit. Yeah. The fact that there is low code, no code, or any other terminology is not really in itself a benefit. Like to me, the benefits that we can offer with what we call codeless as a service are very much two things. One of them can also be done by the other low code, no code solutions. The first one is democratize innovation, bring non-technical users into the innovation mix. Low code, no code, and codeless all do that. Where codeless becomes special is the post-creation. The outcome of that innovation is burden-free compared to just having added, when you use a classic low-code, no-code solution, the outcome of it is just another application to maintain. It's just another application that you will have to upgrade over the years to new technology, that you will have to do penetration testing on a specific frequency. When you put that logic inside the Uncork layer in the cloud, all those things are done by the machine itself. Every time our layer is doing penetration testing, all your apps that are inside are basically benefiting from it. So think about it as, instead of looking at it as one application atomically, you suddenly have those mini behaviors of applications all ruled by a unified layer around it that you don't have to even worry about it. It's very much the same paradigm shift that we had 20 years ago when you had to run servers in your basement. And now they're running Amazon, Azure, GCP, et cetera. There is no reason for insurance companies or banks to have thousands, tens of thousands, in some cases, developers just maintaining legacy applications.
And it seems like that's the, from Uncork's platform, it seems like the business or your customer, if once they sign up to the Uncork platform, Uncork as a business can truly step back. And they almost don't even need your team. And they have this platform. That, for me, is true low-no code. And the customer also doesn't, as you say, have to have hundreds or thousands of developers maintaining the platform.
Correct. And what it can do in this case is, I mean, clearly there's potential savings if they want. But what we hear from customers in a lot of time is they just want to redeploy that personnel from low-value maintenance operations to innovation that helps the business. So it's a huge business opportunity. And that's why the financial service industry, the insurtech, public sector as well, all those verticals that have massive legacy systems, very complex operations, highly regulated, high compliance, high security, this is really the sweet spot that we have gone with because the platform has been designed from the ground up with that in mind.
Brilliant. And let's talk and move on to Gen AI. This was, you know, I've followed you on LinkedIn for a while. You know, you're always quite active around the subject. And as you see, you've been practicing in it way before it was cool. You know, Gen AI is absolutely transforming the way that everyone globally does business. Like within insurance and specifically Uncork, how are you guys integrating Gen AI into your solutions?
Yeah, so we see three major. So first of all, Gen AI is amazing, but there's definitely a lot of hype and a lot of noise. And so to us, what we want to make sure is when we do AI, we do AI with a sense of purpose, like something that we want to move a needle. We don't want to do just AI for the sake of it. There is three areas where we see a huge acceleration thanks to that technology. The first one is the obvious one. It's the concept of smart assistant or copilot. As you are using the product can help you make recommendations, guide you, prevent you from making mistakes. So this is something we are already doing today. And that definitely removes friction in the creation process. Like the system takes some of that burden. The second one is something that we are actively working on, which is the ability to inject AI and Gen AI in the solutions that the end users of Uncork will use. So you have the creator in Uncork creating the application, serving hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands people on the other side, like end users. So being able to very quickly invoke any LLM model that your company might be running from inside an Uncork application, then at this point, the sky is the limit, whether it is in an insurance scenario, for example, a better processing of a claim based on past processings or specific cases or analysis or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The third one, which is a bit of the grail to me, like it's going to take time to get there, but where the sky is the limit is to finally tackle the migration of the legacy assets. If you go to any company today and you ask the CIO what is one of their top challenges, is they're managing applications that were done 20, 30, 40 years ago in some cases. All the usual suspects, Fortran, COBOL, Assembler, it's the who's who of the last 50 years of computing. And they've never been able to move out of that, even with Y2K, because it's such a manual process to even understand what those applications are doing before you even think about moving them. And so they've been stuck with that growing problem because every new asset turns into a legacy itself. Now, Gen AI can solve that. And we have actually built a solution in partnership with AWS where you can throw a COBOL application into an LLM model running on Bedrock. And out of there, you get the algorithm of that application, as well as a recommended new Uncork application to replace the legacy one. So you move from a highly manual process to a very semi-automated to, in some cases, fully automated process. That one is a huge change management. There's a lot of aspects before companies are ready to go at scale, but this is the first time we have a technology that actually makes that remotely possible.
Hmm.
So three aspects again, in product, the ability to inject for end users AI models, and then the migration of assets.
What do you think companies have to do to be ready for that last bit?
Great question. So I think I would probably even take a step back, like what do companies have to do to be ready for Gen AI? I think that's where before we even go to that last migration, what we see from, I mean, the interest is huge, clearly. There is not a single call I have where the question is not raised. Everybody knows that this is clearly where things are going. Companies are already looking at what are the right guardrails, the right governance, the right rules to leverage that technology without getting in trouble on like data privacy and all that kind of thing. So I think that's where we are as an industry. There's a huge interest. There's not necessarily yet a huge traction in production, at least in the industries, insurance, financial, and PubSec that we serve on a daily basis. Once they're past that point and they're starting with some projects in AI, the migration is clearly a major change management effort. It is about taking like legacy applications running on legacy technology, but still doing the job and taking the risk and the effort and the investment to put that in a new technology. So if you look at it as a risk management, there's a lot of potential downs. Migrations are always most downside. Like the best migration is the migration that nobody realized happened, right? So that there's not a lot of fancy upside to sell about a migration. So really it boils down to a cost and risk analysis. What is the cost of maintaining those assets versus what is the cost in the new model, much lower, and therefore what is the benefit? It's really an ROI conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Do you think, you know, you're asked about it on every call, as you say, but do you still think, specifically we're talking to insurance companies, do you feel like the conversation around AI and generative AI is still met with some sort of reticence in terms of the impact it can have on companies? Do you still feel like you're coming up against a bit of friction on it?
Less and less so, I would say. At this point, most people that we talk to are clearly excited and see the value. we're more at the second level of objection. Like the value has been fully appreciated at this point and people are excited. Mm-hmm. Now it's how do we operationalize that as a company? How do we do that as an insurance company or a bank or anything without creating potential? So we're past the early kind of is it good for us to more like how do we operationalize that? How do we harvest the benefit of it? That's what we see in almost every single conversation.
Excellent. And you know, going into the year, well, we're in the year, but as we continue throughout 2024, there's been a few themes for me, particularly within insurance around customer centricity, enterprise management and intelligent solutions. You know, the opportunity that Gen AI presents to companies bound by legacy tech. I'm always quite curious because, you know, the day job is not podcasting. We're an executive search recruitment firm. So we speak to founders and startups all the time. And I think from my take on it is that I don't really still have a handful of specific use cases. You know, I hear the very umbrella term, it can increase operational efficiency, it can increase speed and time, and it's buzzwords upon buzzwords upon buzzwords. I'm just curious if you know, as a business, do you have any that you can share, of course, specific use cases where you're seeing, maybe not Gen AI, but certainly AI at its latest and greatest, where it can have an impact on solving typical challenges for large insurers, like very specific cases?
So the by the way, this is the toughest part about AI. There is so much potential and so much excitement that it's hard for customers to really see the true value, the places where it can make a difference and understand what's noise versus real potential. To me, what I recommend to customers is start small, start with a real problem. Like some customers that we talk to are so excited about AI that they want to find a problem to solve with AI just because they want to do AI. So first of all, let's look at what a real problem could be. If you look at the insurance space, but quite frankly, most of the B2B space, most of the business is still today on papers.
Yeah.
I mean, like let's start very basic, right? Let's look at before we go into those fancy kind of almost science fiction use cases of AI. Of course, there's OCR documents have been digitalized and they're sitting in PDF and there's some extraction that has been done, but there's a huge knowledge, there's a huge experience, there's all this data that has not really been tapped into, quite frankly. So now think about it. All that is just a lot of text, which is what Gen AI is very, very good at. So being able to use this thing to really bring that legacy digitalized paper into proper modernized processes is a huge, huge opportunity. And that's something that's probably the first use case where really people feel the connection between the dream around AI and how can it move the needle on my day-to-day job. So document extraction and connecting that content into the new processes and tapping into that content to make the new processes better, that's a great win. It might not be the fanciest use case, but it's a huge pervasive problem for pretty much any company, quite frankly. So I recommend starting in places like that where you can really very quickly see the value of the before and after. And then after that, of course, there's a lot of other things. Anywhere where there's a business decision that is taken that can be influenced by lessons from the past, and insurance is all about that, right? Insurance is all about statistical and calculations on risk based on past data. So anything you can do to provide in real time or pseudo real time to an end user trying to basically provide a quote, right? An agent trying to provide a quote is also a huge potential value. This is not about just the fancy acceleration. It's just about having a more synthesized access to knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And
those are probably the first two. That's what we see customers starting with usually.
Yeah. And do you find that, well, I guess two questions, you know, Gen AI compared to its predecessors, you know, ML, LLMs, AI, you know, Gen AI is seen as such an accelerator. When you're talking about customers that you're speaking to, they get very excited and they almost want to find a problem to use it with. Like, do you find it difficult to kind of manage the customer expectations concerning not just the long term, but the short and the medium when you're trying to
showcase or present to them, taking them through this journey?
It can be a challenge. It can be a challenge. And sometimes you will engage with customers that have already seen too many very cool demos and are kind of overexcited about the potential. And so that it's really around bringing, reconnecting the business needs with the technology. The technology should not drive. Like what drives is the business opportunity, the business risk, the business problems. AI is an amazing tool. Gen AI is a fantastic tool. But at the end of the day, they're technologies. They're only as useful as you make them useful against a specific use case. So the best way to describe that to people is think about you have a car with an engine inside it, and imagine that suddenly you add a big turbo next to that engine. It's the same car from the outside. It drives the same way. Like that's how I recommend people to think about AI in their business. Don't think that you're going from a car to a rocket ship or something. Think about the same car. You have the same goals. You have the same way of doing things, but you can do better and faster. Start there, because then you really see the opportunities. And when you get down this conversation track, usually customers will be like, well, for example, we've been dreaming for years to be able to do this. Well, okay, well, let's start there. Let's look at what this really is and how AI can help. The moment you re-anchor in reality, the conversations become maybe less kind of marketingly exciting, but grounded in business reality.
Mm. Do you think in a culturally, the ideas there, the conversations are there, you have the vision, someone like yourself, a true expert in the space, and you know, I'm fortunate to have had a very similar levels of knowledge on this podcast around AI, similar to yourself, but do you feel like maybe there's a bit of a gap culturally in the execution of it, because with a lack of talent that can work with AI? You know, we look at software engineers that, you know, can develop on the back end, front end, but really, when we start going down that route of AI engineers, what do you see much in that space? Do you see a lack of talent? Do you see more room for development there?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, the short answer is yes, and I think it boils down to where we are in the maturity cycle of all this technology. The way where AI will continue to go more and more mainstream, the only way for that to happen is to have more and more people able to very easily tap into the power of AI without being ML experts. Yeah. Like if we replicate the same, it's exactly what happened with programming 30, 40 years ago, right? You had to be an expert to program. Therefore, you had a small pocket of programmers and the rest of the world was cut off. Like you have to be able to, I mean, clearly you will need experts to do the most advanced kind of task, but people should be able to potentially like fine-tune a training of a model without understanding all the implication of what is happening under the hood. That's probably the next democratization of AI that needs to happen. It is already slowly happening. I mean, some of the new solutions that the big vendors out there have started to provide help with that. They make the training, they make the deployment of models easier. But that's clearly the next step, the next frontier for this technology to really blossom.
Mm. I just often wonder on that aspect. Do engineers or software engineers coming into, maybe they're graduating, maybe they have a couple of years. I mean, I'm assuming you saw the text to video thing, Sora. Did you see that?
You mean in terms of how frequent AI is in a curriculum of a standard engineer, you mean?
Oh no, first question, did you see the Sora text to video model that was released recently?
Oh yes.
When you look at that and you think, wow, you know, that's just at the very beginning, and you think of it as a software engineer, do you think engineers need to be thinking in more ways of leveling up, i.e. really honing in on maybe the ML AI aspect? Because is it going to get to a point where do we really need software engineers in large capacities to do coding when we're seeing things like Sora coming out? And let's be honest, in 4 or 5 years' time, where is that going to be, you know?
Yeah, I think the big disruption, so like any acceleration in the industrialization phases that we've seen now for like 150 years or so, I don't see, at least in the foreseeable future, a world where all software engineers are going to be replaced by AI models that suddenly do their job. But the nature of the work is going to evolve. And in my opinion, for the better. Like if when you are an engineer today, there's a lot of things you do, right? There's the abstract thinking of what you're trying to do, the solving a business problem. There's the modelization of that problem. Then there is the transformation of that algorithm into a code and a program that a computer can understand. And then there's the maintenance. Some of those things are very advanced and borderline at the mix between science and art, quite frankly, right? This is really where the human brain shines extremely well. Now, the maintenance and the generation of code itself over time, that's something that sounds relatively easy to automate more and more over time. So I think what we're going to see is the job of the engineer is going to become more and more abstracted, more and more focused on those high value functions, that more creative aspect of it. And the burden of the volume of those more kind of low value but high volume tasks will be taken more and more by technology, which is what has happened in the robotic transformation and any revolution before. So definitely the mass of developers that today are focused on maintaining legacy technical debt and redoing that kind of high volume of just keeping the lights on are probably going to be more impacted than people that are driving more kind of a bleeding edge innovation with technology. There's going to be a transformation for sure.
Yeah, excellent insight. Thank you. And look, final question, Thierry, as the CPO, what are, you know, it seems like a hugely exciting time for Uncork. What are you most excited about for the year ahead?
Yeah, to me, the reason I wanted to join the Uncork journey is for more than 25 years now, every time I've been talking to customers, I heard exactly the same thing. We have too much legacy. We're drowning in just trying to keep the lights on. The budgets are getting smaller and smaller over time. We have to do more with less. The business is complaining we can't innovate fast enough. And that has been literally a broken record my entire career, getting louder and louder over time. And so I've always looked around for how can we finally get ourselves out of that catch-22, quite frankly? How do we stop maintaining things that were invented when Eisenhower was president? I mean, it's crazy if you think about it, right? And so when I heard Uncork's vision, that was really an epiphany because I was really looking at that as a way to completely transform that challenge into an opportunity, attacking the real core of the problem, which is that innovation paralysis due to the cost of maintaining assets. It's a very tough problem to solve. We're solving it and customers are seeing the benefit, but once that goes at scale, this is really a before and after moment. This is on-prem to the cloud all over again, but for the application layer of it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we need to watch this space and look for some exciting releases from Uncork this year then.
Yes, we're working on a lot of very, very cool stuff right now.
Awesome. Look, Thierry, this has been so much fun and just fantastic insight. I really thank you for coming on the show and yeah.
Thanks for having me, Gavin. That was fun.